This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:47 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run with Han, Jules and me, Melissa. We've got the Breakfast Grill coming up in about 15 to 20 minutes or so. Dawood Vickery, the President and CEO of INSEF, is going to be on the grill. INSEF is the International Centre for Islamic Finance. It was set up in Bank Negara about 10-12 years ago, and they were set up to kind of build human capital in the Islamic finance industry. So Dawood Vickery really is quite a veteran in this industry, and I'll be curious to get his thoughts on some of the bigger picture issues when it comes to the Islamic finance industry in Malaysia.
So Melissa, is this all about other financial centres like London, Hong Kong, Dubai, Singapore breathing down our necks as far as the Islamic finance dominance is concerned?
Yeah, I really want to get Dawood's point of view on this, because while we have kind of cemented our position as the leader, the pioneer within this industry, within this region, how much are we doing to keep that leadership position? Because, you know, resting on our laurels, these financial hubs are nipping at our heels. Let's find out more on The Breakfast Grill. Dawood Vickery, the president of INSEF, will be on. That's coming up shortly. But first, as promised, Felda's proposal to acquire a 37% stake in Indonesia-based PT Eagle High Plantations, it has now been approved by the Direktorat Jenderal Perkebunan, which is Indonesia's agriculture ministry.
So this was according to an official letter cited by The Edge in their story here. We are still waiting for the official public announcement. Again, this is according to The Edge. So as it stands, price tag here, $505 million. We have had comments recently from the new Felda chairman saying that this deal will be financed by a soft loan or a softer loan from the federal government, which I guess brings back a point that we have highlighted quite a bit here on this show, being the price tag. Is it too lofty, and how will this translate into the already high debt levels on the government's part?
Do you remember one of the explanations? Remember the FAQ that Felda gave for the frequently asked questions about this deal that Felda responded to? One of them was the fact that they said this was a kind of a last opportunity to be able to purchase such a big stake of land in Indonesia, because it had, I guess, G2G agreement or who knows why. But it got me thinking, why would... Indonesia has had a history of protectionism in its agriculture and mineral, as well as its mining industry. And I wonder why now that they've agreed to this deal, because again, it goes against what they've been trying to do, which is close off these natural resources industries to foreign ownership.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of flip-flop in the policy as far as agricultural and other nationalistic industries are concerned in Indonesia. A lot of local politics involved there. So maybe because this has been supported by a very high level in both countries, both, I guess, the Malaysian government, Felda is a government-linked institution anyway, and in Indonesia, this is a very sensitive sector, but if there is a high level approval for this, I think it's only a formality that this will go through.
Yeah. Now, you could look at it as FDI as well, right? Because we as emerging economies, we would basically crave foreign direct investment. So, if let's say a foreign entity and a government linked one at that is willing to, take up a third of, Eagle High, then that could be, seen as a sign of confidence, perhaps. That's just one way of looking at it.
Maybe there is some weight in that argument that Felda is not really controlling this company, not enough majority control in this company, and therefore the Indonesian government will still hold a lot of sway as far as the sensitive industry is concerned. And the sensitive industry is concerned, the second largest plantation owner in Indonesia, very sensitive company.
Yeah, and that's also a good point, because at a 37% stake, given my recent conversations with palm oil analysts, they also say, you know, what's really in it for Felda, because, you know, how much of that earnings can you derive back to Felda from a 37% stake? Also keeping in mind that Felda's needs in the near term are pretty high, given that they will have to replant a lot of their palm oil trees, that given that the age profile is getting a lot higher, and they're getting older, so they need some money quick. So really, is the timing of this deal good?
So they've gotten approval from the Indonesia side. I guess the next, that's one regulatory hurdle passed, and I think the next would probably to secure funding, and you know, then it's a sign on the dotted line, I guess. Well, let's take a look at other news today. We've got former Bloomberg TV Malaysia Chief Executive Officer Michael Chan. He has been appointed the new CEO of MyTV Broadcasting. He takes over from Dato' Haznul Hassan, whose tenure ended yesterday.
All right, so in the interest of full disclosure, Michael Chan used to be my boss. I guess kudos to him. He's found himself a new paycheck. Well done.
And just as a background to that story, Bloomberg Malaysia also closed down, leaving Michael Chan unemployed for a while.
Yeah, right? For a while. So Bloomberg TV Malaysia closed, I think, September 15th of last year.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, it's been a while now. Yeah. So, good job. Way to get back on the speed.
Well, let's talk about MyTV then. I mean, this is, of course, all part of the new kind of movement initiative to move from analog to digital terrestrial broadcast.
That's right. So here's the thing. Even with MyTV and these ambitious plans, granted, it's not new. I was in the States when they made that same transition. I was in Australia when they did the same thing, basically moving those analog TV signals into digital. And that frees up a certain bandwidth of the spectrum to be used by, say, mobile and telco players. For example, I think here in Malaysia, it's going to be the 700 megahertz space. So, you know, you got your telco operators who can then monetize it and roll out more services for people. But back to MyTV, though, that rollout has already seen multiple delays. According to their website, they want to, and I quote, realize the migration of analog terrestrial broadcasting to digital throughout the country by 2016. Real quick time check, it's already the second month of 2017, still not fully rolled out across the country yet.
Yeah, I think one of the complaints was that the service would be too expensive to pay for. So one of Michael Chan's first goals would be to convince these broadcasters to pay a high price. But it also raises the question of the company and the individuals behind MyTV who have been awarded this contract to service this migration, which is like kind of a gatekeeper contract. So how do you determine prices? Is the thing to consider. There's no competition. It's a monopoly. Is it just devised, the pricing structure, is that just devised unilaterally?
Now, if I can draw upon comments from the COO back in 2015, you can check this out on their YouTube channel here. They speak about charging broadcasters or charging these content providers or channel operators, whatever you call them, only when they reach 98% coverage in Malaysia. Now, as it stands right now, I believe they've rolled out like the testing phases. They've also handed out set-top boxes on the east coast of the peninsula. I think Sarawak Sabah is the next phase. Selangor will be the last one. So I think it goes from the east coast of the peninsula to Borneo to the northern part of the peninsula, and then finally Selangor being the last one.
But so, it's not yet 98%.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's not yet 98%. So you know, as an incentive for more of these content providers to jump on the bandwagon, so to speak, they'll be offering it for free, at least for the initial interim. But still, you know, yeah, going back to what you pointed out, the challenges facing my former boss, Michael Chan, yes, you know, on one hand, you have to entice enough of these people, enough of these content providers to jump on the MyTV bandwagon. But drawing from personal experience, Michael Chan is very familiar with the whole delay game. Even Bloomberg TV Malaysia saw multiple delays before eventually launched on Astro in the middle of 2015. So, you know, good luck to him there, buddy.
Okay, 7:55 right now. There's news that says Malaysia has the highest number of civil servants relative to its population. This according to the second finance minister, Datuk Johari Abdul Ghani. And apparently it's eating up government revenue. So we've got 1.6 million civil servants. And that gives us a ratio of one civil servant to 19.37 people.
Now, just to give you context, when we compare that ratio, Melissa, that you pointed out, to, say, Singapore, you've got one civil servant for every 71 Singaporeans. Over in the UK, it's one for every 118.
So the higher the number, the better, clearly.
Yes.
Better in terms of, like, you know, how efficient or how lean.
How lean and mean.
I mean, it's
sure.
an,
civil yeah.
it's an yes. indicator and of averages. So it, how you interpret that average is really up to the stuff that the kind of stuff that economists do to interpret these figures. But as it is right now, as is, the figure does point to a very bloated civil service, and I find it's very significant because the statement is coming from a civil servant himself, the second finance minister, no less, Johari Abdul Ghani, which is very different from the statement of another civil servant a few years ago, Sri Idris Jala of Pemandu, saying that the Malaysian civil service is not really bloated.
Yeah, but so it all depends on how you define the civil service, though, because now, saying that 1 to 118 is better than, say, 1 to 119 ratio, right, may not be the case. I would propose that another way of looking at it is that now you have got one civil servant who is catering to a smaller segment of the Malaysian population. In other words, you've got more civil servants who can provide that service to you. I mean, that's one way of looking at it, lah. So essentially, when you look at, say, the...
It's like that riddle, you know, how many civil servants does it take to change a light bulb, right? Actually, you just need one, but why do you need, like, 19 civil servants
But you have to think about what this is costing the country. I mean, we're talking about total pay of civil servants, $74 billion in 2016. The total how much we're paying for pension is $19 billion. That's a significant amount, especially if you compare it to the year before.
Where I would agree with you, Han, is in terms of the definition of what comprises a civil servant, is that Idris Jala a few years ago offered the defense that nurses and teachers are included into the calculations, whereas it's not in the other countries like the UK. So that would really push up the numbers for Malaysia.
Yeah, also, I must draw upon this anecdotal evidence. When I made that transition back into Malaysia about first quarter of 2012, I believe, you know, I found renewing my passport, renewing my IC, converting my New Zealand driver's license to a Malaysian one, and all these other document changes to be very, very efficient. I can safely say that, again, due to my personal experience, that was because of the abundance of civil servants who were able to dedicate a lot of resources to these services. Now, granted, yes, Melissa, you raise a really good point. At what point, though, where do you draw that line? Because as Dato' Johari is saying now, it is becoming a burden for the federal government's coffers. So in his view, they just need to be more productive, even suggesting that they take up multiple jobs within their department.
But, you know, technology can give you the same level of productivity as we've seen around the world, you know, robots taking up people's jobs. But again, this is a really contentious issue, especially one to bring up during a so-called election year.
Yep.
Right?
The robots don't take a lot of tea breaks.
Or smoke breaks, and then they have to go to the open
car park.
Oh, man.
Okay, it's coming up to the 8 o'clock news bulletin. After that, The Breakfast Grill with Dawood Vickery, President and CEO of INSEF. Stay tuned on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.